Peter, I'd like to know what the focus of the union board is right now. What are you working on mainly?
Do you want to hear your question or just me?
We'll hear both of us.
You will? Okay. The main thrust of the work has to be the consolidation of the gains that was made. And this deals with the trying to negotiate the contracts where we won the elections. And even more important than that, trying to service those contracts that we don't have. And that is going to be the... Now, I would say that even more important than all of those put together is that the question of developing a real defendable and a real... adequate staff, because you know we have because of the volunteer nature of the staff, it's like a river. People come in and go, you know, and so that I think it's also one of the important things we have to do, kind of stabilize the volunteer force so that we have more long-term volunteers to be able to do the job of consolidation.
Has the election law here in California changed the nature of the work within the union as well as the work with the outside of the union?
Tremendously so. We knew that the new legislation was going to have an impact on the union just because we kind of like to pay attention to the history. So we knew that it was going to be an impact. And I knew that it was going to be a very noticeable impact, but I had no way of knowing how. I mean, I couldn't judge how big an impact it was. Yeah, it changed everything. It affected everything we do. Our way of thinking. Our see what the law does is it made us legal. This has a lot to do with life, you know. I mean, really, it began, of course, to make its demands. Gave us a standing, so we got the standing of being a legally recognized group, and then with that comes, of course, the demands that they come with goodies. You know, you get something and you have a responsibility. This has been a major impact, really.
That
we haven't seen everything yet. We haven't seen the. I don't think we've seen half of the impact in this as time goes by. That impacts demonstrates itself in ever so many ways.
One of the things that I have been wondering about was, it seems to me that the law here in California, as long as the struggle is in California, is focused here, that it seems to have quite a major effect on the boycott, which also affects how folks can relate to the struggle, folks that are not farm workers. Do you feel any of that?
See if I understood your question right. I do see, because one of the things that was probably more effective than anything else is the boycott and how we do it.
Yeah.
Now, legally, we have some responsibilities, you know, because the law changed that. But also, the boycott now becomes one of two or three alternatives that we have towards getting to the ultimate goal of getting a contract signed. Real alternative. And so that has had an impact.
What is your hope for being able to sustain the vitality of the union? It looks like a really tremendous task to me.
It is. I think it's the law, one of the impacts that it had was that it affected the way of thinking, also affected who works with us now. And it also changed in a very profound way, I guess, the way in which we work and the how we perceive what we're doing, how we're doing it. So in one, it goes from a lot of motion, a lot of movement, a lot of uncertainty to one of, these are the rules, and you follow them, you'll probably get here, you know. More demand on accuracy, more demand on track, and all those things. So that we're now faced with trying to find out how do you maintain the vitality that we had so that it goes beyond just kind of shouting about Villa Huelga and getting the union going, but that it is this enduring. And I'm convinced that we have to do something to replace that we lost. We had kind of a community of we were united because the persecution had us united, but not, in other words, we're united because of that fact and because we had a sort of kind of a cause, you know. But in fact, we weren't united in terms of the staff being united, in terms of the community. And we discovered that quickly. And so that it seems to me that from here on out, it'd be very difficult for people to work in the union as individuals. In other words, coming in and kind of doing what they would like to do best and kind of being within in the eye of the storm, but kind of still being separate, you know. And so it has some of us advocating trying to form communities first within the staff, and communities that go just beyond like being in the picket line together, but stronger, more identifiable communities. And I think that I don't really know how we're going to get to Florida, maybe much past Florida and Texas in the organizing drive, unless we really develop some kind of community so that then the strength of one, the strength of all becomes the strength of one, you know. And so we share and we stay together. Also, we've been at it now for 15 years without getting money, getting a paycheck. And many people thought this was like a short range kind of thing. We got the workers organized, now we can, and it's not turning out to be that way. The union still is the poor we get. I think in the last quarter our report showed we still need, we only, the dues are only paying for 46-48% of the cost of running the union. So we still depend in large part for money contributions from the outside. So that, that for the fact that there's some of us still in the leadership who are opposed to paying wages to ourselves or anybody else, feeling that we do that, then it becomes an entirely different kind of movement. So in order to be able to deal with that question, we're going to, I think, have to seriously consider finding different alternatives. And one might just be having a real close knit community where people find their, you know, their strength there.
What do you think could be the base for holding that kind of community together?
Well, obviously it has to be the deep concern for social justice, for, in this case, for farm workers, or for, you know, but that could just be like a, it's very easy to say that, but to carry it out, we need to have, we could be very, very deeply involved with one another if we're going to make. In other words, to create the strength, to be, make sure that we not only all together develop the strength, and then each one of us feel the strength of all the others that work with us, but also be there when it's needed, because there are the ups and downs, you know. We have a staff member kind of just looks and says, well, gee, what am I doing here? Really begins to think about it. Long-term security and about other things, and it becomes pretty frightening. So we need to deal with that, and I think we do that. Now, there are a lot of people in the union who I think are willing and are looking for something where they can, you know, feel secure. And of course, you know, it's not going to be for money in our case. So maybe this is, you know, what...
There's always been a religious expression woven into the life of the union, and yet the union is essentially a secular institution. And I'd be interested in knowing how you see that has developed. Why has that been the case?
Well, let me tell you, I think it's what has really happened now. We go back and analyze it, is that the more in trouble we get, the more religious we get, and the least trouble we're in, the least religious we are. I think.
Just like the people. Yeah. That's why I thought I'd never thought.
Yeah. And so what we need to do is we need to kind of find a way in which we can express our beliefs, you know, and have our kind of deal with our spiritual life, you know, in a way that is like lasting, you know, so it doesn't go like, it's not dependent on us getting in trouble so that we can get very worried about what's happening to us, so that it's maintained and taking into consideration there are some of those in the union who don't want any part of it at all, and we got to of course respect that, but also considering that there are some in the movement who want even more than what we're giving them, and so we got to strike a balance, and that is difficult. It is going to be very, very difficult to do, so we don't want to. There's some of us who probably have more need of a spiritual life than others, but we have to make sure we balance so we don't force everybody to do what we're doing, yet meet the needs of those who have that desire. And I don't know how we're going to do it. I do know it's going to be very difficult to do, and so we might just probably, on the fringes of it, more or less for 15 years. It might just be that it'll be totally, completely abandoned. So it'll be just individually people practicing their commitment, you know, sort of separate and apart from the union, kind of hidden away. Or you may be able to turn around and we'll probably be very open and it'll be more and more people doing it. But that is one of the difficult things we have to deal with. See, because it's not a question of people opposing, it's just a question of people not being interested in those that don't want it, you know. And those that do want to have some more kind of formal and kind of outward kind of demonstration are not that strong in saying we want to do it. So
if you had to guess, which would you guess is going to be the direction? More?
Well, I'm prejudiced, so it would be more, I think it would be more kind of, well, if we establish a community, a stronger bond community, it's going to be more religion, yeah. If we don't, then it's going to be like, you know, it's going to be like most groups, you know. See, the real crucial step right now is at the staff level, not at the membership level. We've come together now, here we are, and the staff has to make a crucial decision to be able to see which way it's going to go. And it's a package, you know, you go this way, or I don't think you can go but either one or the other way. And I think we're at the crossroads now.
Can you describe the elements of the two ways? Just simply, like list them.
Well, I think on one hand it would be like kind of, we come to work like at 8 o'clock and leave at 5 and we kind of get paid and we have regular vacations and we have a distinct separate family life, separate from everybody else. We kind of come and during work hours, and maybe occasionally we get together in a picket line and have a meeting at night. That's the extent of the community. That's one. And that's pretty natural and very much what happens now in most groups. Or we stay together day and night and learn how to live with one another. And then if we do that one, then it means we can do a lot of more things without the money, but also means that because we'll be in a tighter group, that then we'll be willing to give up some of those individual rights that we have as for the good of the group, you know. Also means that if we do that, we'll be vastly more disciplined and we'll be more effective and we'll be like acting together, you know, a lot, because we'll have that coming out of the experience of living together.
Seems to me like both time and money are important elements in what you're talking about.
And in doing the letter one, the community one, if we do that, then we're going to have some kind of religion. Either we invent one or we keep what we have, but I don't think, you know, we can go without it. It'll be more meaningful, you know.
Does this come out of your examination of what has happened to other communities and the ones that have succeeded and the ones that have failed? Or is it just intuition on your part?
No, it's not intuition. It's just like a lot of history, you know. First, I always started out with the idea of having a staff would be able to take anything that was dished out to them in terms of sacrifice and work and schedules and just a lot of sacrifice. We accepted that a long time ago. Some of us did. And that was what we preached to the staff, and everybody knew that. And there's some of us who are still wanting to do it. Along the way, we also picked up a lot of people who were willing to do that, but only for a short period of time, because they thought, well, once we win, then we're kind of over the hump. And then we see also what happens. See, we had one plan for 15 years, and that plan is not working anymore. We've got to innovate. We've got to find. We've got to look at it and kind of come up with other alternatives if we're going to keep the vitality we talked about as a group. And so here we are, you know. So it comes out of what we see in terms of experience, but also a little, you know, risk-taking. We want to take some risks because that's the only way life has any meaning anyway.
Speaking about these two elements that I mentioned about time and money, the time in that to develop the kind of community you're talking about seems to me there really is a time investment that then is not invested in directly in the struggle. And how do you see that? Do you see that as a necessary change now, or?
Well, see, we'll be investing even more time in the struggle, because if we go, well, my theory is that we can't stay where we're at now. We've got to move to one or the other, because we've come to kind of, the crossroads. We need to go one way or the other, so that if we could stay pretty much where we've been all these years, then no problem, but we can't. You know? So if we consider that, it seems to me that if we take on a an 8-to-5 job, that's very little time for that we can give in the cost and for the workers. If we go the other way and build a community, then it means we give like unlimited time, you know. Even though we'll be taking more time out for ourselves, which we never did.
Yeah.
We will be taking more time out for ourselves, even though with that as a consideration, we'll still have more time to apply for the work.
The union has seemed to me to be a very unusual island in this society. We're trained in a society to place a very high value on money, and we estimate how valuable our jobs are on the basis of how much money we make, if we're making more money than we used to make. And folks go to college and they don't value so much what they learn, but how good a job that can help us get. And it seems to me the union has really been a very unique island in that. And I wonder if you would say from a little more. You said a little bit about money, but if you would say a little bit more about your view of money.
Well, we like to think that it's just, it's a resource to be used, you know, to achieve our goals, but not the overall important resource, that there are things more important, and of course human beings are more important. So that from where I'm at, I think that money should be, or we try to look at money as a necessary resource, but not the overriding resource, collectively, I mean, for the movement. In terms of getting paid for the work we do, you know, is that, and we're finding it out very, very dramatically, is that, you see, the most important, The most important thing for people is not money, for people at work. Even though you may work for the biggest corporation like in the world, you know, even there, money is not the most important thing. They're finding out, as you know, there's a lot of problems with what they call the new knowledge workers. And they're saying money is not as important as achievement. That is really, and see, it's very hard to get 18,000 employees and then have everybody achieve something. It can be done, but it's very hard. So what you do is you get somewhere along the line and say, well, give them money, we can give them achievement. And so money is being it's been traded off for all these years for achievement and for kind of responsibility. And that's how it's done. And people used to argue, well, if you pay enough wages, you get good workers. And of course, we know that's not true. So that, we don't pay here any money, as you know. And if we don't have any achievement, we're not going to ever get any place. So it's going to be hard.
Peter, have you seen a relationship between that issue of subsistence rights and community also, and also getting other workers organized elsewhere?
Oh, yeah, directly. Yes, direct. Oh, yes, see. I thought I made that point. I mean, should make it even stronger. We can't live on subsistence pay and live as individuals. And but when I mean individuals, I don't mean that we join the group and we give up our individuality, but I do mean that we join the group. There are certain things we give up for the sake of being together in a community. I don't think we can continue to do what we're doing now. We've done enough for 15 years, and I think it's time to change. I mean, it's very obvious all around us. But in order to change, we've got to substitute it with something more meaningful. We've got to anchor it down, and we've got to have a coming together. And so to live with on subsistence pay means we've got to have a real strong base community. And short of that, I don't think you can have it.
And you see a relationship between those things and reaching out to other workers or getting to organize other workers in Florida, Texas, across the country?
Yeah, very definite. Let me tell you what began to happen. Right now in the other unions throughout the country are betting less than 50% organizing workers. Workers are just not, don't want a union, I mean, just for because they're going to get more money. See, the new knowledge worker, the new worker in society today, we've become like a society of employees. Everybody works, right? We all work. And some people are very, very strongly saying, I don't want more money. I just want like a better quality of life. I just want to kind of count, you know. Well, we find out a little bit now and more later is that after the while, the grower is going to give the worker, for a week, he give the worker. And then we find new ways of doing it. For instance, already in Coachella, we signed a contract for $3.35, and the growers next day, without a contract, everybody got $3.35. See? So the worker then says, gee, I don't really need the union for that. I can get it from my boss. Even though it's not really true, it counts to the union there, but it's hard for the worker to make up his mind. Now, you know, it's kind of more difficult. There's more confusion. So we cannot, at a time, the time's going to come when we cannot sell a union to the workers on the basis of just getting better wages and getting more material benefit. You know, it's got to be something else. And that's something else we're looking for. I think you can find in community. I think a strong brotherhood, and not only that we, in the process of union building union, we get better wages and working conditions, but it's also a belonging to. I think that you see this, you know, we see it even in this highly industrialized, complex society. Religion still means a lot, and you still have these religious groups, you know, riding all over the place, under the roof of the cathedral, you know, but it's still, they're coming. In fact, outside, people are looking, searching, and you look at them like, and many of them might not, to be sure there are a lot of poor people who are just running and getting involved in those new groups coming up, but a lot of just middle class and upper middle class kids, you know, so they're telling us something.
A lot of people have turned to the union as what seemed to be them to be a more vibrant expression of the church's life than they think they had found inside the institutional church. And I think that a lot of the young people that come along to the union seem to be responding to that. And certainly a lot of that, I think, is related to your own faith position and what people feel out of what you have, the work you've done. I wonder if you would say something about what you believe to be the central message of the gospel.
You see, it's true, and that was the interpretation that I gave when they asked me, well, what is it? You know, I said, well, it's definitely not just economics, but it's this kind of understanding that we're here, that we have to do something while we're here, you know, and that we've been told because of our training, our religion, our faith, you know, that it's a very clear message that we're a brother's keeper and we should then try to correct those injustices so you see them, you know. And while it's not very, well, we never really try to define it in very glowing terms, but very putting it as simple as possible. We thought that was so that people got attracted to the movement because we made those statements. And this is how we felt, and we still feel that way. And throughout the years, then I think that people who were church-related people or people who had some kind of involvement when they were kids in various different religious activities kind of found in us, you know, some expression of that. I don't know, and I think even today that's true, but probably less than in the heyday of the arrests and all of the persecution we're going, you know, undergoing, so that you know, we very directly stated why we're doing what we were doing, why we got that our message really came from Christ's message, you know. Now, no one really disputed that. No one really agreed to it. It just came. Now, we assumed that a lot of them were coming, or we think that a lot of them were coming because of that, to be sure others were coming for other different reasons. Now, how to really manifest that and make it even more clear is our goal right now. How do we really say what we're doing here is kind of go just beyond getting more wages for workers? Even might even just very, very selfishly just kind of go towards a little bit of saving my soul as I do the work, you know. I don't know. But I think that the movement is also searching. See, I know that myself and a few others in the movement that have been around a long time don't find it fulfilling now to kind of just say, well, you know, we're a brother's keeper and we should fight for social justice. I think we want to have more meaningful experiences of that, even along with the work we do to bring about social justice.
Farm Worker Ministry, both as the National Farm Worker Ministry and its predecessor, the California Miner Ministry, has had a very close relationship with the union. And I wonder, Caesar, if you would describe what that relationship has been. And I know that's, you know, kind of a big question to ask because it's complex.
Yeah, I can make it very, very complex question, very simple. Very simple answer. See, what happened is that somewhere before the union got started, we had made some contact with the migrant ministry, and because they were also involved in the whole idea of how do we get this work done. From personal experiences, seeing the frustration of the people and seeing the great need, you know, to bring about justice, so we kind of met on the road, right? And prior to the union, when we were working in the CSO, the migrant ministry was there, and kind of, it's one of those things, you know, that you don't have to make a decision until you really have to make a decision. So they were there, and they liked what we were doing, but they didn't go that far to identify, I mean, to get into the fight, into the middle of the fight. But sure enough, you know, when the strike started, when the real controversy started, we find Mary Ministry joining us. doing it immediately. And that changed the whole, they changed that their program completely, I think. I'm sure.
I think it did.
And became, and sometimes you remember in Delano, like during the 66, 67, was even more controversial than the union itself. And so that was the, like the, like the starting point for us in getting church people in throughout the country involved with us. That was the instrument. They were the interpreters. They interpreted. Chris and his gang went up and down the valley, and then pretty soon up in another state, and then later on up and down the country, interpreting what we were doing. And it was being interpreted in light of the great controversy that existed. And it split church communities wide open. You know, I mean, people had to take sides. But we didn't win all of them, but we won a lot. A lot of people came and supported us. And so it was, and because we had to go, because of the controversy, because our friends in the church, sometimes in the minority, many times wanted to have an explanation so they could be able to make their point, we went then to try to explain, and in the explanation, in the attempts to explain what was happening, we converted also. So it's like we were organizing without knowing. Now the farm workers are a lot of church people in America, to this idea of helping the farm workers. It was a really, as you know, it was a quite an experience. And you know what happened is that you're so busy working and you're in the midst of this great development. Never really understand it until it's over, and it's like, gee, what do we do? Wow, you know? You try to kind of look, you know, back, and then try to realize that it was a major development for the church in America, I think. Because, you know, there were very few who were not involved. So that if my ministry had not been there, it would have been, I think, very difficult to interpret. To, you know, to go and just, I don't know how we would have done it. I think we would have attempted to, but I think we would have been able to really reach as many people as we did.
Cesar, in that time period we're talking about, you know, up to the recent past, did you ever wish that the Divine Ministry would do more in terms of faith, religious expression within movement? Were you ever disappointed about that?
Yeah. I always wanted more, but you know, I was kind of ambivalent too. No, for me, I wanted more, and then I looked back and I said, well, gee, how can we ask for more when people over there kind of say, oh, gee, another church service, you know, kind of, talking about the staff, you know. So it was like, at two opposite poles, small group people wanting a lot of groups, and wanting nothing, and in between, kind of people, well, you know, gee, we'll go there, and it's not there, well, it's the same, you know. Yeah, I thought that a lot more could have been done. And we found it very easy. We were under a lot of pressure because, you know how it is. But after we became legal and then the law there, and you know, different. It changes.
I think that people would be interested to know who have been some of your most important teachers. We all learn from some folks. So
what do you know? One of the things that I've realized lately is I've been kind of trying to really think, you know, in depth and think, well, try to find out sort of like a way out, you know, how do we keep moving and keep going? Basically, then, if I take all this recent knowledge that I've gathered together, our best teacher for all of us has been the people. We've learned more from the people just than anywhere else, you know. Now, there are some individuals where we get learned, you know, but, and there are, of course, many. But I think that when we really examine, we find out that very, really innovative, very little, very few people are innovative. But we've learned from people doing, or people kind of getting you to the, just to the kind of the edge of the innovation, you know, and just put it there, and you know, you just take it together, just take a hold of it and kind of clarify it, you know. But I really truly think that learn a lot from people. Because see, what they do is that they give you the reason for innovating, the reason for doing things, because we've been, I think, lucky in being able to recognize the unmet need in the, like in the struggle, you know. And there was this need here and the other one, and that forced us to try to fulfill that need. So the worker really was there. And not in the worker. The worker, of course, is the staff. A lot from the staff. And a lot from people outside. Labor, people in the church. We learned. And then there are models. There, you know, they were established there before our time. But I think that a lot, kind of, you know, there's some of the things that Christ said. Very simple kind of things that, you know, very hard to live by, but they have a message there. And other people have then taken that, try to live by it. And we've learned, see, for instance, if you look at Gandhi, which we learned a lot from, Gandhi had an awful lot of the New Testament in him, you know, a lot, you just look at him. But he kind of realized that more than most Western men, probably more than a lot of, probably more than anybody else, who knows. So we kind of went to the east, back to kind of, you know,
a lot of people across the nation know something about you, know your name, know a little bit from the newspapers or from television. But what would you want people? What would you want people to know about you?
But myself? Well, I don't know. Really, you know. I don't know. I've never thought of it that way. I think what they know is, you know, it's what... I mean, that's really not even important, because what happens is that they're always the positives and the negatives, so that... if people learn one good thing about you, they also learn one bad thing about you. So it means the more good things they know about you, the more bad things they know about you. So I guess we're not too crazy, we don't know too much about us. But one of the things I think is that, not that they know about us, but probably one of the most important things that we're able to accomplish is that people do know about farm workers. A lot. Still, you know, we had experiences. We were in the plane the other day, about a week ago, coming back from Connecticut, and they're not called stewards, they're called now
cabin attendants.
Flight attendants.
Mm-hmm.
There were two of them, so I said, aren't you Caesar? I said, yes. And then she called the other girl, and she said, you know my wife. And embarrassed, I said, you should know. I said, I don't know, who is it? And he said, the farm works. Oh, yes, the farm works. See, she knew that. And then,
that is good.
Yeah. So I asked her, what do you do? She said, I'm a steward in my union, the one that knew me. I said, oh, that's the thing.
Well, the farm workers have been able to build some power, and I wonder if you would be able to say a little bit about what you see to be the wellsprings of that power.
Well, it's the people in motion. Power is very elusive. You know how to. We don't know if it's here today and gone tomorrow, but it's. I think it's just we've been able to gather people around. Very specifically on the issue, people who are directly affected by the problem, and we've been able to solve a few things, so that it's given those workers we've gotten together some kind of hope, you know. And then bringing all people together has created naturally creates power, and so that's, I think, the basis for it. But then, because the world doesn't stand still, you know, what's power today isn't the power tomorrow. unless you kind of keep, you know, with the world. And because a lot of the power, just if we had any power, was just the ocean of goodwill that people had outside the bond labor areas in the cities, you know. And when we needed help, it would pour forth, you know, and get us through the hump. And so far we've been able to do that. I don't know how long we're going to be able to do it. At some point, of course, it's going to have to be the workers themselves. Unless we do our job of a real, real basic brotherhood, that we can not only continue to have the support, but really kind of demand the support and get it from everybody else, or from most people.
Want to identify what you feel like is your personal source of power and determination to keep on going?
Now,
that's a long time.
Yeah, now that's a very hard thing for me, because that's a very personal kind of response is needed there. Well, I kind of think it's my responsibility to do whatever I can, you know. Now, I say that because I don't know how to really express the real reason, and that's not the real reason, I'm sure, you know. But it's just like a fire, you know, it's a consuming, nagging, every day, every moment present demand, you know, within my soul to just do it, you know. And so I'm not confused about what I want to do and what has to be done. I'm confused how to do it, see? So it's there all the time. Why, who gets me to do it, why do I don't know. It's a very personal kind of thing, and it's very difficult to explain. I like to think it's a good spirit asking me to do it, you know. I hope.
I don't know how much time you have, but probably you shouldn't take much more. But there would be one last question on my mind that I would personally really like to hear your response to. A lot of people that I talk to and hear about in the church are, of course, there's always the ones that are, you know, that stay with the struggle and are out on Saturday picket lines and everything. But there are many now who are saying that they're really tired of hearing about farm workers, and that they've helped for a long time, and now they have other things to do. And I'd be interested to know, you know, if you were getting that response from somebody in a church, how would you respond to that?
Well, to be sure, you know, I would feel saddened by it, but I also know enough about life to know that these things happen. There's nothing really we can do except kind of say, well, look, you know, you ate 10 years ago, you were eating, you're still eating today, and it's the same people feeding you. The same people aren't getting tired. Imagine what happened if they got tired and said, "Ah, heck, well, I'm not going to work. Where would you get your food?"
I'll keep that one in mind.
Yeah.